Good afternoon. Welcome back. Hour number three of the Vicki McKenna Show. I'm very delighted to have on the program someone who I've read quite a bit. I've never actually had the opportunity and the privilege to have him on the show, and that is Joel Kotkin, the author of The Coming of Neo-Feudalism, A Warning to the Global Middle Class. Now, I promise this is going to be a fascinating read if people pick up the book, but Mr. Kotkin is on the air right now to talk about an outstanding and expansive article that was recently published at National Review talking about the failure of blue policies and what might be, maybe in our lifetime, a reset of what you call, Mr. Kotkin, the exhausted majority, a reset to kind of pragmatic common sense principles. So welcome to the program. It's really a delight to have you on the show, and I have read your work for a long, long time, so thanks for being with me.
Well, thank you, and it's my pleasure.
So as I said, it is an expansive article. It covers a lot of territory, and it's going to be a bit difficult to distill it into, you know, a simple kind of compact radio segment here. But what you seem to be arguing, stating explicitly in some cases, blue policies have failed, and the people blue policies target are starting to realize that. And so they're, whether they even admit it, are acting out their frustration with the failure of blue policies and blue politics to address their needs. So I'm going to let you kind of jump in from there.
Well, I think basically what we have is, by the way, I'm not a political conservative. I've been a Democrat most of my life, is that the initial idea of liberal or progressive or Democratic politics was ostensibly to help the middle class and the working class and the poor. That's reason the Democratic Party supposedly exists. In reality, the policies that are now being enacted by the new generation of Democrats and the newly reimagined progressives who are now increasingly socialists are really damaging minority communities and the poor. And how are they doing it? With energy policies that raise the price of energy, that make it very difficult to locate manufacturing jobs, with policies that have schools where they've become indoctrination camps. So the kids come out of schools, they have no skills, or very little, to say at best. And so basically, on every level, minorities in particular do much better in, oddly enough, the more conservative areas where the private economy tends to be flourishing. In the blue states, basically, the only parts of the economy that do well are at the very low end, with all sorts of, you know, low-end service jobs, and then at the very high end, you know, investment bankers and,
right,
you know, elite programmers for Google. They're doing fine.
Like Los Angeles, right? You're thinking of a big city where you've got really wealthy people who are just smoking it, and then you've got folks who are servicing them, and
exactly,
everybody else kind of gets wiped out.
Right, because, you know, when we take a look at where, let's say, middle-skilled jobs are being created, they're being created, you know, in places like Utah. They're being created in Texas. And why is that? Well, let's say I'm a big company. I've got 5,000 middle management kind of people. To, let's say Toyota and McKesson, for instance, two examples that moved from California to Texas. I'm going to go to a state where my employees, if I pay somebody $60,000 or $80,000 a year, and their spouse makes another $50,000. They can live a very comfortable upper middle class life in large parts of California and New York City. They're lucky not to be living in a crate.
So you're seeing smaller, well, red states, red areas. Of course, inside red areas, you also have very, very blue cities. But generally, red states or purplish suburbs, right?
So because that's exactly
so
right.
in Wisconsin, think of it, because we're a purple state, think of the blue cities and the flourishing purple suburbs, and in some cases red suburbs, but you have more and more people moving there. You've got urban failure in some parts of our state.
Well, I Milwaukee always strikes me as one of the places that the city itself is one of the most segregated cities in the country. It has all sorts of issues that mean that if I'm a business and I'm moving to Wisconsin, which has some very nice things about it, I'm probably not going to move into the middle of downtown Madison. And one of the things that no one has yet calculated, because, you know, we know obviously COVID's had an effect on this, is there's a relationship between density and transit and COVID, is what is going to be the impact on business people. I just happened to have come back from lunch with a friend of mine. He's got a biotech company he's in Orange County. He has a big warehouse in Minneapolis. They burned it down. He says, we're not going back to Minneapolis. We're going to go, you know, somewhere in the Atlanta suburbs or someplace in Florida. Because how can you run a business when every time there's a police incident, whether it's real or whether it's not what may be presented in the media, no matter what it is, just the rumor alone
right.
can start a riot and a looting spree. You know, if I'm Target and 2-3 stores get trashed, I've got hundreds of stores. But let's say I'm and I've interviewed people like this. You know, people who have a small business, their whole lives are in it. They're already hit by COVID, and then somebody smashes their windows and steals their merchandise. And even worse, I don't know if this is yet a problem in Wisconsin. I assume maybe in Dane County it is. You have prosecutors who won't charge people for anything. I mean, you basically, to sort of paraphrase Donald Trump, you know, if you didn't go out and shoot somebody in the middle of the street on TV, you probably get away with pretty much anything.
Well, it's this new wokeness. It's this that elites love this. Highly educated elites love this. Deconstructing everything. So you have powerful people who make decisions that they claim are on behalf of black people or poor people or whatever, ruining opportunities for black people or poor people. And in the case of woke policy, a lot of times for middle class people. And then when people leave, they scratch their head. They can't figure out what went wrong. The woke progressives won't admit that they're wrong on this. And maybe even the progressives, you know, the voting progressives, the young progressives still want to believe it, but they're going to move to Mount Horeb, or they're going to move to Middleton. They're not going to move back to where they were, or set that business up back where it was destroyed by that bad urban policy.
Well, and I also think that this is why I'm so worried about the return to feudalism, because the policies are completely terrible for the middle class. You know, we see this here in California, where you see, you know, housing costs are incredibly high, or energy costs are incredibly high, and everything but the very high end and the very low end gets driven out of the state. So what happens, and this is the great tragedy that the cities have, is the more middle class and upwardly mobile working class people leave, who's left behind? You've got the young, you know, sort of hipster types who, you know, don't have families and, you know, probably think AOC is the, you know, is the Keynes of our era. And then you have people who are dependent on government, and then you've got this group of very wealthy people who are insulated from all their failures. You know, if you live on the Gold Coast in Chicago, you can have private security. You have a driver to take you places. You don't. You know, you're basically insulated from the worst of the urban dysfunction.
And you've seen that map, Joel. I'm assuming Joel Kotkin, by the way, on the program, of Chicago, the change from the middle class, what it used to be, say, I think it was like, you know, 20, 30 years ago, and how that middle class has disappeared. And what is left behind in Chicago, of course, is very poor people and very wealthy people. And it's in, you know, incredibly high housing costs. You've got an urban crime crisis going on. But if you're very poor, you don't necessarily have the capacity, the financial capacity to pack up and move. So you're stuck.
Right, well,
what do you do?
And that's true. I mean, last year I went down, I flew out to Chicago and spent time with a friend of mine who, you know, is very familiar with the community, drove around. It was like a bomb hit it. I mean, this is in the neo-feudalism. I talk about what I call the serf class. People who have no reasonable expectation that they will ever do any better. And so their only demand is going to be how much more can I get from the state? So if you go to a place like the south side of Chicago, you hardly see a business. the churches are closed. A lot of the old barbecue places are closed. The factories closed a long time ago. So where is the opportunity? And you know, I did a seminar for the Industrial Areas Foundation yesterday, which is the Saul Alinsky Group, and they're actually on the same wavelength as I am. They think that these policies are not doing anything for, you know, predominantly African American and Latino working class people. That, you know, they're just they may make the affluent gentry feel good about themselves, but it's not very good for them.
Affluent white gentry. Let's face it here that we're talking about mostly relatively affluent white people who have been educated at elite institutions, who have deigned that the poor suffering masses, must succumb to their smothering and you know, and great progressive love to the, you know, to the point where they completely fail. To the point where there's no opportunity left. Look at education. I mean, education has, what does it do? Look at Chicago, look at Milwaukee, even Madison schools now. They're dumbing down curriculum. You've got kids who are graduating barely reading at eighth grade level with virtually no skills. And yet, you know, the parents who can move, the people who can get out and go to those suburban schools find that there is a much more vibrant educational experience for their kids that are teaching them much more, you know, relevant skills. And so you do see people sort of creating opportunities for themselves if they have the capacity to do that.
Right. And the tragic thing is, and I was just actually talking to the same fellow because he's very active in the Catholic Church. And one of the things that's really, that you know, who had a business that got burned down in Minneapolis, you know, one of the things that's really sad is the Catholic schools used to be the alternative. If you were a working class kid in any major American city, you could go for a very low price to a Catholic school and get a good education. But the Catholic schools are you know, basically getting, you know, to the point of bankruptcy.
Yeah.
You know, so that alternative that exists, and then there are some bright spots, let's say, with charter schools. But you know, let's face it. You know, one of the first things that, you know, President Biden will do is try to wipe out the charter schools. I mean, that's absolutely, because, you know, he owes his election in part to the teachers union.
Well, and we see that just with COVID, we've seen a massive increase in the number of people, even people who call themselves progressives, supporting the concept of school choice. Maybe for the first time ever. Oh, Mr. Kotkin, I sure wish I had a little bit more time to spend with you, but I'm out of time in this segment. I will direct people, please, to the National Review article. I will make this easy and put this on social media, called Blue Today, Bluer Tomorrow. It's not nearly as depressing as the title makes it sound. Thank you for coming on my program today.
Okay, thank you.
Great to have you on the show.